Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice and almost the revoice of the master of mirth and inveterate storyteller, Brian Brown, who created the Brown Briefly. Together, we, the Briefly, strive with dogged determination to keep Brian's creative flame alive by bringing to you every week another episode of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less. And he invariably always offered more. I'm still recovering from New Year's Eve. Let's start today's show, as usual, by introducing the Briefly, zooming in from his home today and not engineering the show. Is my friend, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, Voice of Vachon Board Member, West Texas Roughneck, Eastern Montana Band Member, former Army Intelligence Specialist, fellow treetop flyer, and expert eggnog maker, Truman O'Brien. Good morning, Truman. How you hanging in there?
Good morning. Yeah, I like the eggnog maker. That's good.
Yeah, you and me both.
I do make a dynamite egg.
It's killer.
It seems like we heard about your eggnog affinity last time, didn't we?
Yeah,
maybe that was somebody else.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
It is awesome. And it's no calorie, too. It's amazing.
Oh, no.
None whatsoever.
Or alcohol.
Right. Or alcohol, right. Zooming in from his home as well here on Vachon above Burton is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group. In addition to chairing the Equity, Social Justice, and Inclusion Committee of the Vachon Maury Community Council, our tireless defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones. Hi, Kevin.
Good morning. Good to be here. And I've been able to get out on the bike for a ride for the last 2 days in a row. You know, so you know what that means.
Well, we'll find out.
it means I'll be on the couch for 10 days.
Oh.
Instead of three.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Other than that, we're doing good.
Okay. All right. I understand. And zooming in from his home is historian extraordinaire, skipper of the Vashona, president of Vashon's own fantastic heritage museum, party animal, and globetrotting guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Holman. How are you, Bruce? Oh, you're on mute.
Thank you. Yep, doing well. Enjoying this sort of very mild winter we're having right now. It feels almost like spring.
Mm-hmm. It is a mild winter. It's for January, you know, 2nd. It's amazing how
we set a record this weekend. I think 63 degrees at SeaTac.
Wow, that's amazing. Mine is the voice of Craig Bellis, former tow truck driver, repo man, teamster, apprentice, auto mechanic, Pinkerton guard of Pan Am's first 747. Hi, Vachon. High fashion shoe salesman, former Washington State Attorney General, constitutional law and tort professor, two times Half-Bright scholar, international arbitrator, and Amway salesman back when there were only two Amway products, the sudsing and the non-sudsing washing.
Early adopter.
Yeah, if I'd stuck around, I'd be a multimillionaire probably. So, but I didn't. I was, I think, 15 or something when I started that. Joining us today in the studio is Alex Bruel. Alex, who is the editor of the Vachon Beachcomber, will be giving us a brief year-end review and his impressions of our fair isle. Alex joined us here several months ago, so we're very anxious to hear an update since he has taken command of the Beachcomber.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure having you. Thanks for being here. And Alex is with me in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. Before we start, I want to know what people have been up to last week. Probably a thing or two with the holidays. Bruce, how about you?
Well, it's been an interesting week. Yesterday, Alex and I were out doing the Christmas bird count in Quartermaster Harbor, so I'll let him tell you a bit about that. And today I've been sitting above KVI Beach watching the plungers, the polar bear plungers. And there have been multiple plunges beginning about 10 a.m. I think there's a big one set up for about 2. So we'll see. But usually there's anywhere from 80 to 100 people that do a polar bear plunge here at KVI Beach on New Year's Day. And so there's been smaller groups, 10, 15, going on all day long. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at 2.
Yeah, it's always fun to see the pictures of those people running in and running out quickly.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever done that, Bruce?
I grew up in Florida where the water is warm. So, no. But I have to report that our 6-year-old grandson, Theodore, did his first plunge today. Wow. And he loved it. So you never can tell.
And what about your New Year's? The night of New Year's, did you do New Year's
Pretty
Eve?
Quiet New Year's Eve.
Okay.
Around the Holman household. We didn't go out and celebrate. We missed the big do at the O space that I think you can tell us about.
Yeah,
right.
I will. Yeah, I will briefly. I saw on social media a number of people who had these official tickets to stay home.
Yes, Pam and I had one of those.
That's right. Kevin, how about you?
Yeah, I saw some plungers myself today out on the ride. They were just south of Burton, so they were enjoying the outer Quartermaster Harbor. And so I wished them a hearty New Year's Eve or New Year's Day as I rode by on today, since we're actually on January 1st here. Recording the show. I've been getting ready for the first meeting of the Vashon Climate Action Group in a little while. And you mentioned how warm it's been. And so the Vashon Climate Action Group folks have been paying attention to that. We've been looking at climate actions from other groups around the Puget Sound area and looking at legislation that could open the door to more solar. So the group is meeting Saturday, January 6th at the Land Trust Building, 3 to 5 p.m. You don't have to be an official member to show up. Just if you want to pop in and see what's going on with the environment, what's cooking with the climate is probably not the way I'd want to say it. but we definitely want to have people get together and talk about actions we can take. So that's what we're up to.
What time is that again, Kevin?
We start at 3 o'clock and we'll run from 3 to 5. In the Land Trust Building, there will be snacks. So.
You should have said that up front.
Yeah.
I'm anxious to hear if we have time on today's show. At the end of the show, we're going to ask the briefly sent Alex if they have any predictions for 2024. I probably think that you, Kevin, will be offering a prediction or two, perhaps in the area of environmental matters, or you might go totally a different direction. Who knows?
It's hard to say.
Up to you. Truman, how about you, aside from trying to deal with some issues?
That's a primary thing. I did have a nice visit with some relatives who came up from L.A. I don't believe they brought this with them, but we, a couple of us did come down with it about the same night as getting together with those folks. But, getting the sheets changed on the bed was my big accomplishment for the week. You know, I mean, I haven't gotten much done because of this darn cold. So that's it for me. And I should clarify there. Kevin just mentioned, since everyone is going, what the heck are these guys talking about? January 1st, we are recording this today on the 1st, and this will be played at our normal airtime tomorrow. That is for you folks listening today. Anyway, that's what we're doing.
Well, now that was confusing, Truman, since nobody's listening today.
But we can, in good faith, say Happy New Year.
That's right.
People will understand.
Exactly. Alex, how about you?
Yeah, I had a wonderful New Year's Eve party with my friends in Tacoma, just about 10 minutes south of the Point Defiance dock. I had one of those sort of mundane but intense arguments with a friend at New Year's, and I kind of want to get the group's perspective on this. So we were going to put on a video of, you know, well, he suggested putting the New Year's Eve ball drop video for midnight. And my argument was, that's pre-recorded. They're rerunning it every hour. The better one to do is the Space Needle, something, a local news channel. And he said, well, but the ball drop is the big, iconic American event. And so it was this argument between, do you do the bigger event that's not really live, or do you do the local one that, I don't know if you saw the Space Needle, was like covered in fog. I'm just curious where everyone's, because this was a heated point of debate for the 20 minutes up to midnight.
I know what I would do. I mean, normally, lately, I haven't made it past 9 o'clock, so I'd watch the ball drop at 9 o'clock. But if you made it to midnight, I'd go with the Space Needle.
Thank you.
Totally agree with that, TF. Now, I made it to midnight, but it was like with head half droped onto my shoulders with the book slipping off of my lap. And I think the local fireworks actually prompted me into awareness that the hour had changed. But yeah, if I were up and about, Space Needle local.
I think I'm getting head nods from the other two briefly.
Well, yeah, you are.
I actually usually watch the Saturday at 7 o'clock p.m. Not Saturday, but the day before New Year's Eve. From Sydney.
Yeah.
They do the big bridge sort of thing. Then I feel good about it. So I've got a whole day to sort of not worry about what I'm going to do New Year's Eve.
Good idea, Bruce. Yeah. Truman, how about you? Where's your vote go?
Well, I would go with local for sure, but the drugs did wear off long enough for the boons to wake me up at midnight. So I woke up and opened one eye and went, Happy New Year, closed and went right back to sleep. So there you go.
Wow.
That was my excitement for the night.
Well, my last few days were actually very wonderful. We went down to Ashland. My wife and I went down to Ashland, visited our son and daughter's families, our granddaughter, and had our traditional meal at Omar's, the oldest continuous restaurant in Ashland. Which is like right out of, The Sopranos. It was a wonderful visit. We flew commercially down there since if I flew in our own airplane, I'd hopefully still be somewhere up in the clouds. But the other aspect of the last week was we flew back yesterday and somehow, without taking a nap, I watched the horrible Seahawks game. And then got ready and went to the O Space. What a show. What an incredible gathering that was of people. Just everybody dancing out there, filling that entire place. They had sold out for a long time. And I was so happy to be there and seeing so many friends. And so Lynette and I actually made it to midnight and danced the night away for all of another 5 minutes. No, I mean, I think we made it to 12:15, but it was just a fabulous show with Martin Fevrier doing his Bowie Rex routine with a super band from Seattle of great musicians. So I was very pleased, and now I'm sort of recovering myself. My voice is a little not as low as Truman's, but okay. So today is a significant day, as are all days. January 2nd, which is when you're going to hear this, of the year. So 364 days remain until the end of this leap year. Kevin reminded me it was a leap year. I had the wrong number of days remaining. So it's the year of the Olympics and the year of presidential elections, which is always leap year. Which I keep forgetting, so it doesn't make, but 4 years go by, I can't remember that as a marker. So.
I had to look it up, yeah.
Now, there you go. Today
but
is...
now I know the trick now.
That's right. Today is National Science Fiction Day, Ancestry Day, Cats Day, Motivation and Inspiration Day, also National Buffet Day, Cream Puff Day, and run it up the flagpole and see if anyone salutes it day. A lot of days today. In 1839, on January 2nd, the first photo of the moon was taken by French photographer Louis Daguerre of daguerreotypes. In 1900, Emile Berlinger, a.k.a. Berlinger, begins manufacturing 7-inch, not 45s, but 7-inch single-sided records in Montreal, Canada. He also invented the gramophone and the rotary engine for aircraft and an early helicopter. He's quite the inventor. In 1906, William Carrier is awarded a U.S. patent for the first air conditioner. This one I find always fascinating. In 1970, the U.S. population was 293 million. It's now over 336 million. In Washington State in 1970, the population was 3.4 million, and now it's over 7.8 million. It's doubled in the state of Washington since then.
We've been growing here.
We have, and it then shows. Been to the airport lately?
Let me jump in here.
Yeah,
too.
Yes.
The population of Vashon was 6,516 in the 1970 census. So 6,500 people were roughly right around 12,000. So Vashon's population has doubled.
Yeah, since 1970. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. The last thing on my noted dates is in 1974, the President of the United States imposed a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. Now, that begs the question, what president? Anybody venture a guess who imposed the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit?
Would it have been Jimmy Carter?
That would be the guess most people would make, but it was President Nixon.
I'm going to say Nixon.
Yeah, it was Nixon.
Interesting.
So, moving right along, let's go to small talk and talk to Alex, editor. You know, I like to say editor in chief. You don't? Do you have that title?
I just prefer editor.
Just editor.
Yeah. It's like my legal name is Alexander, but no one calls me that.
Okay.
Same right. Idea.
I'll call you Ed. No, that's too. That's too brief.
You can call. I respond to Al. I'll do Al.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds like a song. You visited the Brown briefly here several months ago when you first were just about to assume the responsibilities of the editor mm-hmm. of the Beachcomber.
About 3 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, and we thought we'd ask you to come back, and you've graciously joined us. And this is pre-recorded because at this time on Tuesdays, you are frantically laying out the Beachcomber, are you not?
Yeah, we pretty much... You know, get up at 6 a.m. By 7 a.m., we're working to start getting pages ready. And usually around 3 p.m., with steam coming out of our ears, we finish out. And then I usually need to take a nap afterwards
because
it's a full day.
I'll bet. Yeah. How you do that every week just amazes me. I edited Law Reviews and you know, we took months. Mm-hmm. Doing mm-hmm. that,
we make a few more mistakes. So I think people, you know, a little bit more room for error, I guess, but not too much.
You don't make too many mistakes. Those of us who've been on Vashon a while, and I think that's all four of us, are familiar with Beachcombers that used to have a kind of a fun load of mistakes. Mm. But that's all right. Again, if you could remind us, give us a short review about yourself and how you ended up becoming the editor of the Beachcomber.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess the long story short of, you know, my passion for journalism, writing has been sort of always a part of my life. And then journalism was something I got into during college, and it was sort of a career path to continue being a writer. And so after graduating, I spent some time working at a few different newspapers around the western side of the state, Longview, Enumclaw. Most recently, before this job, I was in Federal Way, where it was my hometown. And then for those who don't know, The Beachcomber is owned by Sound Publishing. Sound Publishing owns maybe a dozen newspapers in the sort of King County, Snohomish area, more up in Alaska as well, and Kitsap. And so, you know, Liz Shepard, the former editor and now reporter, was sort of looking to take a step back from, you know, the insane output of work she did over the last 3 years. And so they were looking for someone to sort of take that mantle, and it was offered to me, and I accepted. And now you're all stuck with me.
Well, you're doing a great job, in my opinion. I'm always amazed at the coverage of issues that you have, especially at the end of the year, of course. Bruce, did you have some jump in here?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So, Alex, we had a chance to talk on the boat yesterday. Alex was out doing the Christmas bird count with us and some Audubon folks, and so we had a chance to talk. Alex, I never did get to ask you, what are your impressions of the Vashon Island community? Since you've been here 3 months, you've come from Enumclaw and Longview and Federal Way and working on the UW Daily. What's your impressions of Vashon?
Mm-hmm. I had a column a few weeks ago, maybe about a month ago, where I wrote about sort of the surprising similarities between Vashon and Enumclaw, which politically could not be more different in relative to King County. They're I think if you go by voter precinct, they almost do form each axis, each pole of the left-right political divide. But in both places, you know, I've found people who are very independent, you know, somewhat skeptical of rule by county government, have an environmentalist streak, have sort of maybe a stronger connection to local indigenous tribes. There were a lot of connections I found there. So I think those are the things that stick out to me. Vashon is, you know, I mean, they say keep Vashon weird. I mean, it has a quirkiness to it, you could say, that is, I think when you come from a city like Seattle or Tacoma to Vashon, it maybe comes off as cute, but the longer I spend here, it's a personality trait. It's the kinds of people who want the independence and the challenges that brings. Those are sort of some scattered thoughts, I guess. I think independence is sort of the word that keeps coming to mind. You have to be somewhat self-sufficient to survive in a more rural area like this.
Mm.
But at the same time, very community-minded. So I think with the independence comes the realization that no one, you know, you don't have a police department. You have two sheriffs, but, you know, there's less system to bail you out. So you need to be able to rely on yourself and rely on your neighbors a little more.
Right. Anything else on that topic, Bruce?
Well, I just, Alex, we talked yesterday, and I think it would be interesting to tell these guys about your daily story.
Your
experience of working on newspapers and what that says about the newspaper industry at this point.
Yeah. So the first paper I worked for was the student newspaper at the University of Washington, which was The Daily. And then after graduating, I went to work for The Daily News in Longview. Newspapers are usually not very creative in terms of naming what they do. But both of those papers were, you know, named The Daily or The Daily News because at one point in history, they used to print every day. The Daily at the UW no longer does. They may be a weekly now, I think, or biweekly. And The Daily News also is no longer daily. When I was there, they were, I think, 5 days a week or six. I think they're now down to twice a week. So, you can call it maybe a metaphor that's a little bit too on the nose, you know, about the way local journalism is changing. But all these papers across the country that are called The Daily do not print daily. Now, they put stories online daily. So in that sense, they are still dailies. But, you know, maybe we should, if you're starting a newspaper, you might want to call it The Weekly and just sort of be prepared for, or I don't know, if you know, be prepared to not commit to being The Daily, because that is a big ask in this media environment.
There are some strange names. I mean, I always thought the Post-Intelligencer.
Mm-hmm.
Is that after intelligence? Is that what that means?
Were they a a fusion of two other, because usually that happens when you have the Post and the Intelligencer. I should know my history of the PI better, but
it's an unusual combination.
It is unusual. Yeah, it's very unusual.
Kevin, did you have a question or a comment?
I like the idea that you can choose a name and then grow into it with the weekly, if you will.
Right, exactly.
But before I jump into a question, Alex, we actually have some fan mail. This is from Andre Stepankowski.
Oh, gosh. He's a sweetheart. A
courtesy of a good friend, Sue Rutherford. Uh-huh. And Andre writes, just so our community kind of has a perspective of that experience and your work there in Longview. Alex is a very intelligent and dedicated journalist and human being. He and I shared many deep conversations about the role of journalism, ethical issues that arise from news stories, and many other topics. I've always appreciated Alex's out-of-the-box thinking and ambition to make this a better world.
Wow.
So, here.
Andre is one of the greatest mentors. I've had an incredible Pulitzer-winning journalist in Longview, one of the people who... He was not even a year into his career there at that newspaper when Mount St. Helens erupted. Mm-hmm. And so the next that became, you know, the rest of his professional career there was, I mean, there's no one I know who knows more about the eruption and all of the political and ecological consequences than him. So mm-hmm. he's a sweetheart for sure. Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you had a great collaboration.
Yeah.
But my question is along those same lines, in terms of, you know, rising to the occasion. What do you think has been your most challenging issue about being editor? And what kind of feedback are you getting in that role?
Yeah. I think personally, I guess you could call it a flaw or a challenge that I have struggled with professionally for a long time is communication anxiety, email anxiety. Journalists were not always the best communicators, despite it being our job. And so prior to this, you know, and a lot of times as a journalist, I mean, you're getting so much information. There's no way you can possibly respond to everything or jump on every story. And often earlier in my career, that I would let that be an excuse to kind of respond to people slowly or not at all and just say, well, I got to keep moving. And in the role I'm in now, I can't do that anymore. There's a, you know, when you're kind of the nerve center of the editorial part of the paper, you do have to respond to people. You do have to keep communications open. And that's something I still struggle with to a degree. It's something I'm trying to be better. But it came up because a month ago I got a strongly worded, very critical email. I won't say who it was from, kind of taking me to task on it. And you know, I told the person I really appreciated hearing that, because I think at the back of my mind I knew it was something I needed to improve on, but it was sort of the kick in the pants mm-hmm. I needed to, you know, to kind of rise up. So that is something I've appreciated about the job, is I think it's calling me to up my game a little bit. So that has been a challenge, and I'm happy to try to meet it.
Awesome. There's always learning opportunities there, right? When you're in visible part of the community and people know how to reach you. I'm also curious, is there a fundamental mission or purpose that you want to bring to being in your role of publishing a paper like The Beachcomber?
I keep it very simple. I think the mission, the principles I have here are I think the same I would have in any community. I think it gets to what our role as a newspaper is, what the role of local news is. We're here to inform people. We're here to tell them what is happening on Vashon and Maury Island, and, you know, maybe other parts of the world that connect to Vashon and Maury Island, to tell them, you know, without inserting our opinion, to give them the information they need, to hold people accountable who are in power, and to provide news that's, you know, also sometimes kind of entertaining or a little weird or, you know, to give a little slice of the different parts of life that I think someone would expect from a paper.
You know, that's an interesting point. I when you watch the news or you read the news, there is that line. It must be awful tempting sometimes to cross over that line and to add a slant, if you will, that speaks to your personal opinion or bias on certain issues. Obviously, in the issues that you pick to talk mm-hmm. about, that has to come across to a certain degree. You probably you know, try not to do that. How do you deal with that? I mean, you learn to do that, or do you want to do that at all? Or when I say that, put some of your own particular bias into the news reporting.
Sure. I think about it in two ways. I think the first is to take a step back. Everyone is biased. There is no neutral observer. I mean, it's sort of like Einstein's, you know, physics. There's no neutral observer. Our goal is always to try to be as objective, fact-based as possible. But the facts that we choose to include in an article, the way we choose to describe them, I've said to people, if you take a 1,000-word article and you really pull the whole thing apart, there are tens of thousands of decisions, all the different ways you can word something, all the facts you leave in or out. So I'll never claim to be some objective avatar of neutral. I mean, that's just, no one is. So understanding that, what I try to do is write what seems to me to be what I know to be true and you know, the best understanding of the facts on the ground. Sometimes I'll write things and people will say, that's your opinion. And what is that? You know, that's a sign of bias. What's that doing in an article? And I think there's reasonable room for disagreement and on that. But I think what you have to do is just be open-minded and accept that sometimes your perspective will cloud your judgment. That's human nature. Be willing to listen to people who take the time to criticize you on it, and take that as a learning moment. But yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a boring answer. Neutrality is an unattainable goal that you have to nevertheless keep trying to attain.
Kevin?
And, you know, Alex, I'm actually going through what I would call that same challenge right now in a piece that I'm putting together for the Equity Committee. And I, for me, I go back and I look at it, and then I look at it the next day and I go, oh, well, there's some obviously biased language. So from your perspective, is this just something that's learned over the years of experience? Or is that something like, you know, I have to review those two or three times just to make sure that I'm coming at this from a neutral perspective? Just curious how it works for you.
I think it, you know, you could think of it as a skill. And in that sense, some people are more naturally, you know, they kind of start out with an ability to do it more easily than others. I mean, to answer your question, yes, it's something that everyone has to work on always. It's especially why, you know, in writing, it's so important to have other people look at what you write, because you can look at it the next morning and catch a lot, and you're still going to miss so many things. If you really want to have something as unbiased as possible, you will need other pairs of eyes. And again, I also just think that especially when it comes to some very live kind of hot issues in the world, there's not only is there no way that you could be write something that would be viewed as truly unbiased, but I think even attempting to do so, you know, if that was your only goal in doing so, you would end up kind of not saying much at all. So sometimes I think sometimes you have to accept, look, I'm going to say what I think is true. I know how it's going to be interpreted by people. I know that it'll be seen as bias. And I have to be true. If I'm not saying what I think is true, if I'm saying something to try to reach some kind of imaginary neutral point, then I'm not seeking what I think is truth. I'm seeking consensus.
Bruce. Hey,
I had a question, Alex. It's sort of, you talked earlier about holding power accountable. I mean, that's something the press does, and the Third Estate, that's really one of the functions of the Third
Estate. It's what we're supposed to do, at least.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. And it's interesting. And I wonder, both here on Vashon and your experience in Enumclaw, I mean, on Vashon, there's really no local power. I mean, there's certainly the fire district, the health district. You need to keep an eye on those airport commissioners, of course. And that kind of thing. But you know, King County is sort of our government. We don't have any local kind of unquote power on Vashon. How do you do that? How do you work that?
Yeah, I actually think that your example of our various taxing districts, I think those are, I think that's sort of the, when I think of, you know, okay, who are the elements in town who are sources of power and authority? I mean, to me, those are them. I mean, the fire district, the two sheriff's deputies we have, the parks district, the healthcare district. I mean, these are all entities that we do write about and which are I mean, they collect taxpayer money and they spend it on things. So it's natural that they're going to be the source of scrutiny and criticism. And so I think that's when I think of sort of the elemental role that a newspaper has to serve, you know, yeah, those we've got to, you know, take a high priority of holding them accountable. And then you're right. I mean, you know, we have probably more to do with King County than the average city does, because King County fills in a lot of the gaps that a city municipality would. And then aside from that, it is, you know, part of, you know, what I'm doing now as I grow more into the role is finding the other sources of power in a town that are not necessarily the governmental sources, but the more, the difficult to describe and capture. I can't remember the name of the book now, but if anyone recalls the, I think it was the New Jersey, or New York road titan who famously never held office, but got all these roads constructed. I think it was New York. The name is blanking on me, but anyone who knows about that history will know who I'm talking about. Famous journalist who wrote a lot of books about interviewing this guy. And one of the points was that people can accrue a massive amount of power without ever being elected, without ever being in the public eye. And so part of it is detecting who are the people who are decision makers and power makers who you would not necessarily think of, who are not the first names that come up. So that's part of it too, I think.
Well, you're looking at him there on the screen, on the Zoom screen, right there. Bruce, Kevin, and Truman. I do know exactly what you mean on Vashon. There are a lot of people who are not governmental, you know, elected individuals or whatnot, who do wield a lot of influence, if you will.
Yeah. The movers and shakers is the term.
Right.
You know,
that's right. Up.
You know, Alex, a couple of things that came to mind in terms of opinion. You know, the editorial section of the paper is always a great place where you can express your opinion and get away with it. I mean, because there you're talking about, well, you know, what do I believe is the case with this? And I think that's an appropriate spot for that. And I wanted to mention about talking about naming a paper and then growing into the name. I think Craig and I should have thought of that when we started our LLC to buy our airplane. We named it Treetop Flyers and did not intend to grow into that name.
But rose to the challenge, or you dipped into the challenge.
Well, in retrospect, we were going to name it, a Pot of Gold LLC or something, or two old guys sitting around.
Two old guys sitting around the hangar drinking beer LLC, I think. Alex, one question I did have. I noticed that quite some time ago, the paper changed the size. I mean, it went from... square to long. I don't know how to describe that, but are there any other changes that you've made or you see coming?
When did you, this change you mentioned, is this within the last, since I've been here, or is this prior to that?
No, it was before, I think. Okay. I think it was before you came.
Just want to make sure I'm not hallucinating some.
No.
Okay.
It was the paper was a different shape.
Yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. That's a lot of how the physical layout of these papers has evolved, especially as the layout and production becomes more centralized and standardized. I don't have any kind of urgent plans to change, not really anything as far as layout. I will say, and we haven't even announced this in the paper, so this is an exclusive that I can give you, but a family member had kind of struck me with this idea, and I think it's just like lovely. I really want to start, and it would probably be something we'd run every month, but we're still hammering out the details. We would call it Fairy Tales, and the idea is it would be a series of, you know, semi-regular series of features in the spirit of like the New York Times Modern Love, taken from small but very kind of precious moments on the ferry system. So both on the Tahlequah, Point Defiance, and on the North End. A few reasons why I think there's value to this. I think one, it's just if you walk out on the ferries, you know, you see just all sorts of interesting human moments, because I think they're an inherently kind of romantic location, especially if you're a tourist and you haven't been inured yet to all the dysfunction. If it's your first time on the ferry, it can be a lovely, lovely place. And if it's your millionth time on them. So I think there's great stories to be had there. I think because they're so elemental to who we are, there's an opportunity to do more writing about them in that way. And I also am inclined to think that it wouldn't hurt to have, not that I'm trying to whitewash the problems with the fairies, but to have some pieces of positivity, to have some pieces of humanity that are kind of parallel and adjacent to, you know, the urgent need to improve the fairy system. We can at the same time talk about, here's some really interesting human things happening. And so the image I have in mind is, you know, couples, you know, who are coming over to get married on Vashon, having a moment on the ferry, or parents bringing their kids, and it's the first time their kids have been on a seafaring vessel. So my hope is that we'll be able to ask people pretty soon to start submitting things to us, and we can run like little, very short kind of stories from them. And then also, you know, we can write features ourselves of people that we talk to there. So I think it'll be fun.
I see a bunch of hands raising, arising there. Kevin, I think yours was up first.
Well, I think, Alex, what you mentioned about the notion behind that piece, the fairy tales, harkens back to what you said also about Vashon compared to Enumclaw. And you don't have the services handy in Enumclaw. You have to be a little bit self-sufficient. You know, the ferry system is truly a lifeline, right? And I've talked to some people who are like fourth generation islanders who say that, you know, back in their day, it was very respected that people work in the ferries. That was how you got to town. And the amount of respect that that engendered at that time was very different than what we're seeing today. So I shout out to that concept. I think you're on a winning streak there.
Hold on for a second. I'm going to give you back the floor in a second, Truman. Bruce.
Oh, yeah. I'll dig it out for you, Alex, and get it to you. But there's a book written, a kind of humorous book called Fairy Tales, you know, back in the 1970s, written by a Vashon Islander, and a compilation of sort of fairy stories. So I'll dig out that reference. I'll get you a copy of that book because it's a great idea. And the fairies are integral to who we are as islanders. And love them or hate them, and we both do both at different times. It's a great sort of avenue to get people to talk about Vashon stories. So yeah.
Thank you, Bruce.
It's a great idea.
Truman.
Yeah, I agree. I have to say, though, that the business of the respect that you were discussing, you know, that's common throughout. I mean, I was an airline pilot. And in the early days of flying the airlines, everybody, I mean, you dressed up, you wore a suit, you know, it was a big deal. And the position of captain was, you know, really revered. And now over time, that is really eroded. And now you see people in flip-flops and ragged shorts and, you know, and there's just a totally different regard for the crew. Flight attendants are not respected at all anymore. I mean, it's really changed. But I think that's common, you know, throughout our culture. It's not just the ferries. So
yeah, I think
point well made.
The other quick ferry story is that, to give you a perfect example of what you're talking about, Alec, going on the Point Defiance run once, the ferry stopped in halfway across because there was a pod of orcas. And they came right up to the ferry. I mean, right next to it. And people I'm surprised the ferry didn't roll over. Everybody was on that side looking. And the captain came on and said, hey, you know, folks, we got these orcas out here. If you want to see them, we're going to stop here for a few minutes. And it was really just a great moment. You know, beautiful day, and everybody was out gawking at the orcas. So anyway, cool thing.
You know, back in the old days, they occasionally would let a passenger come up and drive the ferry. And my wife had that privilege on occasion, and she never once ran into a wing wall.
We did not have that tradition in the airline. Just to be clear.
I wanted to also say thank you, Kevin, too, for pointing out, you know, the and, you know, Truman, you also got to this point as well. But part of why I think this project is important is this is a chance for us to talk to the Washington State Ferries employees as well. And I think so often when we write about the ferries, the people we hear from are Vashon residents who are upset, understandably, with the service, and we hear from the top brass at Washington State Ferries. But I think that the kind of, you know, rank and file line people who are actually the ones responsible for getting us all on and off, those are the people that sort of slip through the cracks in our reporting. And that has frustrated me for a while. I think this is a way to, you know, I mean, they're going to have stories. I mean, my God, the things I'm sure they've seen happen on the ferries. So they're a big reason, hearing from them is a big reason why I want to start this project, because I think we don't hear from them enough.
Yeah, hear, hear. I think that's a good one. Although I'm still waiting for, like, the Goldendale or the newspaper where they had the social, you know, so-and-so went to so-and-so's house and they ate this for dinner and they wore these clothes and stuff, real small-town stuff.
Yeah, blame Facebook for that one. We used to, all newspapers used to be able to do that, and then Facebook happened.
That's right. That's exactly right. Right. Do you have a most interesting story? I mean, I hesitate to put you on the spot for since your tenure here.
Yeah, I would say, you know, there's stories that have happened since I got here in the fall and then, you know, throughout the year. So I'll kind of do a little bit of both. I think obviously the Seattle Indian Health Board project is a huge story, easily one of the biggest three on the island, in terms of, you know, what it's going to mean for the island, the sort of different, you know, I mean, there's strong opinions about the project in the community that, you know, we've heard. And I think the promise of what that project could bring if it's successful. So that's a huge story. Obviously, the sort of ongoing evolving, you know, on those same lines, the evolving healthcare situation on the island with the healthcare district and CMAR following their split last year. That's another huge story. So I think, and then, you know, the fire district levy. I mean, when I think of what has dominated the paper this year, I think of these big public health and safety organizations sort of going through change and evolving, and either that means growth or, you know, charting a new line. I think that's, when I think of putting a headline to it, I think of a lot of Vashon's health and safety organizations kind of finding new footing. And then, you know, there's been stuff like the troll, obviously, that, I mean, just really kind of more fun artistic stories that have kind of echoed, I think, more than I thought, maybe we thought they would. So the Thomas Dombo, you know, art project here was huge. You know, other than that, I mean, it's easy to say the ferries, but the ferries continue to be, you know, one of the biggest challenge, and we still, you know, are waiting for more concrete answers on, you know, getting service returned. Those are sort of the things that jump out in my mind. There's plenty of things I'm missing.
Those are all interesting, very interesting stories, and they're ongoing stories, as you pointed out. Those are kind of things you want to keep your eye on. That actually is a bit of a segue to what I'd like to do here at the end of the show, and hopefully, Alex, you'll join in on this. I was going to ask the Briefleys and Alex if they had any predictions for 2024. It can be anything from the local level to the intergalactic level. Do you have any off the top of your head you want to stick your neck out on there, Alex?
I think we're going to see, and maybe this is hopeful optimism, I think we're going to see an evolution in transportation access to the island that might mean getting a concrete understanding of getting boat service returned at the north end from state ferries. I think that could also mean, you know, something exciting coming out of the Seattle Indian Health Board partnership. It's very early on. We don't have an answer yet, but I think there are movers and shakers in this community and on the mainland too, who have, you know, an interest in seeing better accessibility for the island. And so that's exciting to me. I think, and again, this is probably naive optimism, I think we're going to see some evolution and growth of the transportation system and maybe some interesting ways of getting people on and off the island. You also have elected leaders. I think Emily Alvarado and Pramila Jayapal come to mind as two people who have both talked about sort of, you know, poking the legislature and poking Congress to invest in some of these answers. So maybe it's water taxis, maybe it's, you know, water planes, maybe it's getting new ferries. I think you're going to see something begin shifting in that direction.
It's interesting. Just want to remind our listeners that 2 weeks from now, we're going to have the King County Executive, Dow Constantine, and of course, we'll ask him the question about the water taxi.
Mm-hmm. I'll be very curious to hear what he has to say.
Gentlemen, briefly, what are your predictions for 2024? Kevin.
Well, I do have a few, and you probably can predict the theme that's on my mind. But before I do, Alex, I just want to say the last Beachcomber that I read, I think it was the last edition, had the summary news review. It had Pramila Jayapal's visit to the island and a summary of those who've left us over the past year. I thought it was just really, really well done. So just wanted to do a shout out for that. Prediction-wise, I think in the Washington State Legislature this year, we will open the door and remove barriers to solar installations that will affect us here on Vashon Mori Island as we move to work expeditiously to address the growing threat of climate. Again, a shout out, a shameless self-promotion. Saturday, January 6th, 3 to 5 p.m. at the Land Trust, you'll hear some of those details, but my prediction is the state legislature this year will remove some of those barriers. I think toward the end of the year, when we look toward two elections, I think we're going to see President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris remain in the White House. I think the U.S. House is going to change to Democratic control. And I think the Senate will remain tied, but we shall see. If enough people move and take action, that could be a more positive outcome, but I think that's kind of where the trend lines are right now. IndivisibleVashon.org is a place that you can go and find out how to get involved and how to make that reality that I mentioned even more true. And the last thing I'll say is there's six initiatives that look like they're going to be on the ballot in November. All of them are intended to roll back progress made to date in our legislature. I believe all of them on the November ballot will fail. Again, that will take some education of voters to show how some of those ideas sort of turn the clock back on a lot of what we'd like to see here from our island community. So that's what I have in my mind.
Those are good. I hope those are based on objective evaluation and not wishful thinking, which we have a tendency to do from time to time.
Well, if you go out to IndivisibleVashon.org, at the very top of the page, there's our Get Out the Vote information. You can see we've done a fair amount of research on where people can put some time and energy to make those outcomes come true. But any more details here would just sort of go down a rabbit hole. But.
Okay. Truman or Bruce?
I got just a short one, and that is I really do think that the ferry situation is going to get better. I think there's just too much pressure and too much concerted thinking about how to address some of the issues here on the island. And I just think that's going to happen. Maybe they'll put Captain Joe in charge of it and he'll fix it in 3 months, you know. That's what he claims.
We should maybe, should we make that as a prediction, Truman, or is that a bridge too far?
That's a bit of a stretch, I think.
Bruce.
Yeah. Alex, I think you'll begin to get in touch with the book you were referring to is Robert Caro's book called The Power Broker.
Yes, Robert Moses was the person Moses, who wrote about. Thank you.
And hopefully you'll contact the Robert Moseses of Vashon.
Yes.
Get to know them better and get to understand Vashon, because nobody totally understands Vashon, but mm-hmm. as a newspaper editor, you're probably in the catbird seat when it comes to that. So, and I make an unfailing prediction that Joe Biden will win Vashon by over 80%.
I think that's a safe bet.
And along the lines of these other what others have mentioned, Yeah, well, I see us returning to the mosquito fleet days. It's really interesting. You know, mosquito fleet, late 19th, early 20th century, boats were going everywhere from every place. And we're seeing that reemerging with water taxis running all over the Sound. And I think we'll see more of that coming to Vashon. So those are my predictions.
So, Bruce, just to be clear, would they service other locations on the island rather than just the north and south ends? Are you talking about maybe Burton or?
Well, more likely servicing, someplace like the Tramp Harbor, Portage Tramp Harbor, heading over to Des Moines to get that south, right. Sort of King County, Des Moines, Federal Way. They're difficult to get to from Vashon. But with a water taxi running back and forth between Des Moines and Tramp Harbor, boom, all of a sudden you take that pressure off both north and south ends.
Yeah, good point.
Kevin.
So what's coming to mind, Bruce, as you say that, is we got the Tramp Harbor dock refurbishment. We've got the fact that wasn't that the original ferry dock?
First car ferry to Vashon was right there at Portage. Harbor dock is, right?
Okay, sounds like it could be an interesting wedding of two interesting ideas there.
I have a few predictions.
Can Harbor Dock have a foot ferry service would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I predict that now that they've made breakdancing a Olympic sport for the Paris Olympics, that the next Olympics, pickleball will definitely be part of. Of it, but that's not for 2024. I predict that on April 8th, the moon will devour the sun over many parts of North America, at least for a few minutes, until we do some dance and they chase the moon away. On a more serious note, I think Pope Francis will get the Catholic Church to bless same-sex marriages and create more powerful roles for women. It's glacial in its speed, but it seems a move in the right direction. I predict that Mexico will elect their first female president. There's only two people running, and they're both women. On a darker note, I think we'll have increasing culture wars as the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, and social media targets and reinforces users' biases. As far as the news that they get. Nostradamus predicted, quote, the dry earth will grow more parched, he predicts in one quatrain, and there will be great floods. Elsewhere he warns of very great famine through a pestiferous wave, the latter phrase potentially referring to tsunamis, destroying agriculture and allowing disease and starvation to take hold. I'm not going to leave us on that note. I will also make a prediction that we will have much more in the way of female representation amongst the Briefleys before the end of the year. Those are my predictions for 2024. How much time are we looking at there, Truman? About 2 minutes?
About half a minute.
About half a minute, okay. Well, I want to thank Alex for coming in here and bringing us up to date on what's going on at the Beachcomber. It's wonderful. Yeah. We really appreciate the work you're doing. I think it's great. Kevin, Bruce, Truman, and me, we thank you all for listening to The Brown Briefly. Tune in next Tuesday when Kevin Jones will be hosting a lively discussion with former Washington State Senator Sharon Nelson. Is that right, Kevin, if I got that right?
Well, I think she's on, but I'm not sure that I'm the host.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I'll be hosting.
Oh, Bruce is hosting. Okay, my mistake.
Yeah, and then, glad we sorted that out.
Yes, I know. And as I indicated, King County Executive Dow Constantine will be our guest in 2 weeks. So with that, I thank you all, and I wish you all a very, very happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.